Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the HDFC Life Insurance Company Limited FY20 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Ms. Vibha Padalkar, MD and CEO. Thank you, and over to you, ma'am.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us for the discussion on our results for the year ended March 31, 2020. Our results, including the investor presentation, press release, and regulatory disclosures, are already available on our website, as well as that of the stock exchanges. I have with me Suresh Badami, Executive Director, Niraj Shah, CFO, Srinivasan Parthasarathy, our appointed actuary, and Kunal Jain from Investor Relations. I will run through the key highlights of our FY20 results and would be happy to take questions post that. Starting with an update on the current situation. As a result of this pandemic, human lives have been disrupted, and organizations around the world are witnessing challenging times. As a responsible corporate citizen, the safety and well-being of our employees, customers, and partners, and ensuring uninterrupted service to our customers are our foremost priorities. The impact of the outbreak has been seen across both new business and renewal collections, with customers wanting to conserve cash till clarity emerges. While it might take some more time for things to settle down and a new normal to emerge, we believe that the structural story for insurance remains intact, and we expect business to emerge stronger at the end of this pandemic. Our existing suite of digital assets has enabled us to continue providing a seamless experience to the end customer from a new business and servicing perspective. On the servicing front, adoption of our digital servicing avenue has seen an overall increase of 67% during the lockdown period, while usage of our bots across WhatsApp, Twitter, and web has increased by 70%. We have settled around 3,000 maturity claims, around 300 death and health claims, made nearly 21,000 annuity payouts, and processed close to 95,000 transactions in the first 15 days of lockdown. With regards to new business, we have seen a jump in the adoption of assets such as chat-based identification tool, pre-conversion verification chat, which allows customers to self-authenticate their details. Our virtual frontline sales model, WISE, enables our sales representatives to connect with customers via video calling and complete the sales process. Next, on business performance. While there was disruption in the last 10 days of March, we have been able to exhibit steady performance and delivery across all key metrics in FY20. We grew by 18% based on individual and overall APE, covering over 6.1 crore lives in FY20. Overall new business premiums have grown at 15% in FY20, leading to a market share of 21.5% amongst private players. We grew by 19% based on individual WRP compared to private industry growth of 5% and overall industry growth of 6%. This led to a 170 basis points increase in market share from 12.5% in FY19 to 14.2% in FY20. We maintained our leadership position in the group segment with a market share of 29%. Our new business margin for FY20 was 25.9%, an increase of 130 basis points over the same period last year. Value of new business grew by 25%, increasing from ₹1,537 crores in FY19 to ₹1,919 crores in FY20. A sharp fall in interest rates during the year led to lower EV unwind. This, coupled with strengthening of our persistency and mortality assumptions, resulted in our operating return on embedded value reducing by 200 basis points to 18.1% compared to 20.1% last year. In anticipation of the possibility of worsening mortality due to COVID-19, we have created a COVID reserve, the adequacy of which would be reviewed at regular intervals. Our profit after tax saw a marginal increase over the previous year to ₹1,295 crores. This is after providing ₹106 crores for the Yes Bank 81 bonds held by us. New business strain was offset by our robust backbook surplus, which grew by 17%. Our solvency position remains strong at 184% compared to 188% a year ago, with the drop being due to fall in equity markets. We have received board approval to raise Tier 2 capital via subordinated debt. It is an enabling resolution, and the extent and timing of the fundraise will be assessed in due course. The sub-debt would provide greater ability to increase our protection business and additional cushion against further market volatility. Additionally, in line with the IRDAI circular to conserve capital, we have not declared any dividend for FY20. Next, on channel performance. The share of proprietary channels has increased to 36% in FY20 from 32% in the previous year. We remain focused on strengthening our relationship with all our bancassurance partners, including HDFC Bank, and maintain our market share with HDFC Bank. Additionally, our broker channel crossed the milestone of ₹500 crores APE, growing by more than 1.5x over FY19. We continue to diversify our mix beyond the traditional modes of distribution and have deepened our relationships across 270 partners, including more than 40 in the new ecosystem space. Moving on to the product performance, our focus on maintaining a balanced product mix has helped us weather multiple business cycles, and we continue to actively pursue the same. Our savings business grew by 18%, while protection grew by 22% in FY20. We continue to address longevity risk for customers through our annuity and long-term income proposition. Protection remains a key focus area for us and accounted for 27.6% of our business in terms of new business premiums and 17.2% on weighted premium basis. Individual term protection was at 7.6% of individual APE and grew by 33% over the previous year. 13-month persistency has improved from 84% to 88%, and 61st-month persistency has improved from 51% to 54% for individual business. We continue to monitor persistency in this difficult period for customers, especially for the ULIP segment. We have also strengthened our assumptions in anticipation of any weakness in persistency. To conclude, we believe that while there are challenges in the short term, as detailed in our IR presentation, there would also be opportunities in terms of increased demand for protection, inorganic growth, and a flip to our reimagining insurance framework, such as work from home and offering innovative digital solutions to customers. We are preparing for multiple scenarios to pan out this year and will dynamically review and react with agility as events unfold. We endeavor to protect our downside risks while staying well poised to spot demand revival as the devastation caused by COVID-19 recedes. The detailed disclosure on our results is available in our investor presentation. In the end, I would like to thank all of you for your continued support of our company and hope that you and your family stay safe. We're happy to take questions now.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question, you may press star and one on their touchstone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Suresh Ganpati from Macquarie Capital Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, we've got two questions. One is on the any anecdotal thing which you can share with us as to how the what is the on the ground feedback with respect to how people are reacting to this COVID-19 situation? Is there a demand for a higher sum assured? Are more inquiries picking up? Are companies asking for more cover for their employees? Anything that you can share with?
Yeah, hi Suresh. Yes, certainly. So some things are coming out very clearly. While if I were to look at March last 15 days and the degrowth that all of us witnessed, however, my online channel in the same period grew 13%. So against the degrowth in the month of March of 28%, my online channel grew by 13%. Similarly, I'm seeing a term APE growing. And again, just for the standalone month of March, my term share was 10% as against an overall annual share of about 8%. So that too, again, is showing, again, intuitively, that's what we would expect and that's what we are seeing. We're also seeing slightly smaller ticket size emerging. So people are somewhat reluctant, again, understandably, to have an outlay of you know, higher ticket sizes. Another aspect is that we are getting a lot more inquiries on group term insurance from lots of employers. Unfortunately, this is not the time only to cover COVID. It needs to be a more holistic level of coverage that employers should be looking for all their employees. We are also looking no reduction, for example, in annuity business. We are also not seeing that much of a reduction in some of our non-par business, which is a lot more of, in fact, it augurs well when people think that the, you know, everything is just doom and gloom. But clearly, unit-linked is not favor of the season and hasn't been for a while, and it's just deepened in terms of people staying away from that and from the market. So I think this is what largely we are seeing, Suresh. What we're also seeing, another aspect, is that customers, after refusing to engage at all, or prospective customers, are now somewhat willing, at least in some of the geographies that are showing signs of ending, the lockdown ending, apart from the metros, we are seeing willing to engage in conversations about slightly lower ticket sizes.
Okay. And can you ask someone to explain the page 22 of your presentation, which is the Milman report on ALM approach? Because I have some clarifications which
certainly.
I wanted.
Yeah. Certainly. Neeraj, you want to have a...
Hey, Suresh. Milliman had actually reviewed our ALM approach, as what we've mentioned last time on the call as well. What you see on page 21 is the overall risk management framework, and what you see on page 22 is a summary of what Milliman has put out. What the scope of the review is to basically assess appropriateness of the ALM strategy for the non-par business. That business, as you're aware, has two portfolios. The first one is the non-par savings and the credit protect portfolio, which is portfolio one. And the second one is all our annuity business, which is both immediate and deferred. So if you were to just go back on page 21 at the bottom, what you will see is that our embedded value and VNB sensitivities to interest rate for the overall book have been laid out. You can compare it with what we've disclosed in the past as well. And both on embedded value as well as on VNB margin, the sensitivities are fairly contained. And on the non-par book, we put it next to that. What we've mentioned last time as well is that sensitivity or dollar duration is basically something that helps you manage small changes in interest rate without any slope change. What would be more appropriate for a liability like regular premium non-par savings would be cash flow matching, which will not just cover small and parallel shifts in yield curve, but also slope changes and larger changes and convexity as well. So that's where cash flow matching becomes more important. So we are happy to take a little more sensitivity in terms of dollar duration if we are able to get a good cash flow match. So that's what is there on page 22 as well. So the stresses that we've actually tested are over and above what we showed you on page 21, which is the 1% interest rate up and down. If you look at the scenarios, the first one is basically 150 basis points shift in interest rate up and down. The second one is combining this interest rate variation with changes in persistency and mortality experience. And the third one is the stress of all guarantees being called in with 100% persistency and interest rates dropping sharply over the next few years. So just about 4% for the next 5 years, then dropping to 2% over the next 5 years, and then 0% thereafter. Even in that situation, the net asset position remains positive. So what this exercise was meant to do was to validate our approach and also give comfort both to management team, our board, as well as to investors that this approach is appropriate, not just in terms of ensuring that policyholder liability cash flows are protected, but also limiting the impact on the shareholder value.
Okay, so the gap is positive throughout, right? Neeraj, 4.5%, 7%, the gap still remains positive in the first two scenarios also.
Yeah, of course, it's positive for sure, but the changes are also fairly contained.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Prakash Kapadia from Anived Portfolio Management Managers Private Limited. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity. I had, you know, two questions. Do we have, you know, any arrangements with, you know, some vendors to ensure, you know, renewals for our existing policyholders or some back-to-back arrangements? Because, you know, these are tough times, so any such arrangement is there?
Yeah. When you say arrangement, yes, we have...
For a loan or some mismatch.
So on a loan, apart from unit linked, we are able to give a loan against policy, especially after two or three premiums have been paid and there is some level of surrender value that is being firmed up. So against that, the regulations permit us to give a loan. It is an over-the-counter loan and can also be repaid by the policyholder once that immediate cash flow stress scenario eases off. So we are telling our policyholders that rather than surrendering or lapsing their policy, why don't you take a temporary loan in case you think that you know, unsure of the cash flow situation, and then you can always foreclose the loan. There is no minimum tenor. You can foreclose the loan, and so that's something that we're doing. What unfortunately we can't say is for unit-linked policyholders. Regulations earlier used to permit that. If that's no longer the case.
Okay. So this is excluding the unit portfolio.
That's correct, yes.
And how do we charge, what is the interest rate for the tenure?
It is cheaper than taking a personal loan. Quite cheap, much cheaper than a personal loan.
And, you know, there have been talks and, you know, discussions at IRDAI for a health product. So how different is that product which, you know, standalone health insurers currently offer? And what is the advantage if, you know, a life insurance company have to do it?
Yeah, so we also, as a life insurance company, we used to be allowed to sell health indemnity products. But that was withdrawn a few years ago. Our limited point is that the health opportunity is very, very underpenetrated. So largely, if you were to look at, India has one of the highest rates of out-of-pocket spending in healthcare, almost 70%. And when you look at some of the even emerging markets, a lot more coverage is there. So our humble submission is two-pronged. One is that penetration really is still very, very low. So the pie really hasn't expanded. So we would like to help expand the pie. And second is product innovation. That if we are allowed health indemnity, then we can also have product innovation wherein we can ramp down life cover, ramp up health, have health savings account wrapped around health indemnity, and so on. And third is of ease for the customer, because we need to put the customer in the center of everything. And that is, if he goes for medicals once, then, you know, I can just, with very little pain to the customer, I can give him a more comprehensive cover. So all of that means that it makes eminent sense, and it is just too premature for different parts of insurance sectors to say that, you know, this somebody will do and not do. I think really keeping all these things in mind, that's our appeal as a industry.
And upon the board approval for tier 2, is it what, due to COVID or the provision which you mentioned because of Yes Bank or reducing reinsurance for higher growth, what's the objective of the fundraise?
So no, it is really nothing specific. It's something that we have been toying with even towards the end of February. It's simply that, you know, our solvency ratio has been hovering, we ended at 184%. It was 188%. So it's been hovering around 190% and thereabouts. We have said that as a board approved policy at 170%, we will have to think about raising capital. Although even at 170%, it is a fairly comfortable situation, but nevertheless. So given that and given the equity market fall, so our solvency has been impacted by about 10% due to the equity market fall, not specifically the 81 bonds or something. So it is an overall generic fall that we have witnessed of about 26%. As a result, we thought that when green shoots starts appearing, and hopefully it's not that far away, then we should not be strapped. Because imagine a situation wherein lockdown progressively starts disappearing in non-metros. But at the same time, equity markets remain extremely volatile. So there is a pressure on solvency, but demand is also there. And that situation is not entirely inconceivable. And hence, we thought that for growth capital, especially from protection point of view, it makes a lot of sense to just make one's capital position and balance sheet a little bit more robust. But even today, we are in a comfortable situation. And the final point is, you know, when you separate out economic solvency versus a factor-based or a rule-based solvency, economic solvency is even more comfortable or a risk-based solvency.
Understood. That's helpful. Thanks. I'll come back if I have more questions.
Thank you.
Before we take the next question, a reminder to the participants, please limit your questions to two per participant. Should you have any follow-up, request you to rejoin the queue, please. The next question is from the line of Ajox Frederick from BNK Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, ma'am. Thanks for the opportunity. Ma'am, my questions are pertaining to protection. So we have been hiking protection prices at the far end, like 1 crore plus kind of sum assured, whereas our competitor has been hiking prices on the lower end of sum assured. And as you have pointed out, our recent scenario was tilting customers towards lower ticket sizes. So will this impact our demand in protection sales, retail protection sales going forward?
So, you know, for us, we have never been the cheapest, just for the reason that that tends to be a very dangerous game. India has had one of the lowest levels of term prices. And when you look at, when you move towards interior India and whether that is really sustainable, one has to be very cautious about it. And plus the limited amount of KYC that is available for us to do any risk-based monitoring. So even before we reinsurance pricing and after, I think we haven't really wavered that much. I think we need to price it at a sensible level wherein the mortality risks that we see emerging especially are something that we are able to cover. So to your question, I think we will have to stay competitive, no question about it. But at the same time, we don't want to carry the kind of risks on our balance sheet that we either don't understand or we are very aggressive.
Margin impact is not there. That's what you're trying to say here. You've passed on all the reinsurance rate hikes completely to the customer?
No, that is not the case with us. We will still be competitive and not necessarily pass on all the increases, but we will find other ways of ensuring that we are margin neutral.
Okay. And just one more question, ma'am, on servicing clients through video calling. How many clients, my question was more with respect to the sourcing side. So how many clients are okay to do a telemedical, or has the shift, are you seeing a shift dramatically on ground?
Yes, we are seeing a pretty major shift on the ground. So if you were to look at telemedical itself, earlier before COVID, it was hovering, and I'm just going back in time, start of FY20, it was about 8 to 10%. That went up to 24%. Today, we are trending at almost 55% of telemedical. In volume terms, it has gone up by 50%. So telemedicals, along with a lot of data analysis and making sense of the data that we already have, as well as enriching it with the data that is available, legally available, means that we're able to separate out and understand risk a lot better and hence be able to increase the amount of telemedicine. So this is going to be a ongoing thing. So it's not just a COVID-related thing that we are relaxing something for COVID. That's something that we would stay away from.
Okay. And final question on, again, COVID. Since not only us, most of the private players have good exposure to Maharashtra and Bombay, during our stress testing, have we factored those things into our mortality risk?
Yes, very much. Yes, I can pass it on. So you know, we set up a COVID reserve covering about 4,500 odd lives. Srini, you want to give some color on how we went about that?
Yeah. So the way we went about setting up this COVID reserve is we sort of mapped the actual COVID cases across the geographies versus our own lives that are spread around the country. And sort of, you know, saw where all, which all pockets are more exposed. And accordingly, we've come up with a number where, you know, we think we can sort of provide for an extra 4,500 lives in over and above the normal mortality that you would experience. And, you know, that translates to about 40-odd crores in terms of reservings. There is a lot of science gone behind whether, you know, it's a group product and individual, and whether it's metro and, you know, town B or C. So, you know, a lot of analysis has been done, and we have mapped the entire geography of, you know, of the country, and across with the actual number of lives that we've written, considering both the individual as well as the group protection products we've written in the last few years, and thereby arrived at this number of 4,500 extra lives that can be covered through this additional reserves.
Perfect, sir. Thanks a lot, sir. That was very helpful.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Sumit Kariwala from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. Just wanted to get some color with respect to change in operating assumptions during the year, and also some color on operating variance, what came down, what went up for fiscal year 20.
Srini, why don't you give that?
Yeah. See, operating assumption, you would have seen in that investor deck that the operating variance has been largely positive. But in spite of that, we've gone about strengthening the assumptions, mainly on the back of the COVID scenario. We've primarily strengthened our persistency assumption across all cohorts, across all segments, UL, participating and non-PAR, because we don't know what the customer's propensity to pay would be. But like I said, the operating variance is largely positive. It's only because of this COVID that we sort of set up these additional prudence in the assumptions. And they are mainly centered around persistency for the three segments I mentioned. Mortality is by and large fairly neutral, and the COVID reserve that we set up is the only extra bit that we set for mortality.
Okay, so what would be 13-month persistency assumption for units in your as of fiscal 20 now?
The actual experience you would have seen in somewhere in all the slides we've shown, the actual experience is around 88%,
three,
I think.
Yeah.
83. So, but we have strengthened it fairly sharply from 83, and we just wanted to wait and watch. And if everything goes normal in the first quarter or, you know, few quarters, then we'll probably unwind those prudence from the persistency assumptions.
See, because just to interrupt, Sumit, we are seeing cash conservation, like I mentioned in my opening comments. So while us and I'm sure all other insurance companies also will try and reach out to the customers once this immediate panic situation, people come to grips with it. And hopefully with a lag, they will pay their premiums and they're able to reinstate their policies. But really, we don't know how long and how, so we're just being a little bit conservative.
Yeah, also IRDA, you would know that they've given an extra window to pay. So they've extended the grace period. So people may just avail of that extended grace period. So, you know, policies that where the premiums were probably due in April, and most of them would pay by May earlier. Now, in the new scenario, they may actually pay up in June. So, since the situation is evolving, we were a little bit more cautious in setting the assumptions, in spite of the fairly positive experience we've seen in the various segments.
Okay. So, final short question.
Mr. Kariwala. Sorry to interrupt, sir, but if you have any follow-up, request you to rejoin the queue, please.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question. Mr. Kariwala? Sir, you may go ahead with your question.
No, I was just trying to check the persistency numbers that have been given. Is that as of 11-month ending, or that also incorporates March with some grace period?
This is for the 12-month ending February. So it's from previous March to February, Sumit.
Okay. That's
only 12-month number, because the up to March numbers will only come in around this time.
Clear. Very clear. Thank you, Neeraj.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Harshit Toshniwal from Premji Invest. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Hope you guys are doing good. One question. So, in the retail protection, can we get some color on the policy ticket sizes and number of policies within FY 20 and 19? And how do you think that changing, because you have taken the reinsurance rate hike, but simultaneously there's a demand for lower ticket size policy. So some color around growth on that aspect.
Yeah, so it's not necessarily that for protection it's a lower ticket size. I'm saying my comments were more in terms of for savings it's a lower ticket size. For protection we're not really seeing a lower ticket size.
Okay.
But if you want the numbers, maybe Neeraj, you can just pass on the numbers on ticket size.
Look at
go ahead.
From a ticket size perspective, one big shift that we've seen over the last few quarters is the switch to limited pay, which is now a significant part of the business, where customers are actually preferring to pay in a shorter span of time and have a coverage over a longer period of time. So that way they get done with the commitment sooner, but the coverage continues for a longer period of time. So that, as you would appreciate, has only increased the ticket size significantly over the past few quarters. So lower ticket size, I mean, we can see demand coming through various modes. Some people might actually prefer return of premium because they believe that the value doesn't come to them in case nothing happens. Some people may actually want to take a decision every year in terms of how relevant the coverage is. So the thing is that we are offering all of these options, and depending on a particular customer's thinking in terms of how he or she wants to go about it, as well as in terms of the environment, what you just mentioned right now. So we don't know which way the demand will evolve. We have all these options available, and we are happy to kind of offer all of them to customers.
Okay. Sir.
Yeah, and final point I had there, Harshit, is that if I were to look at March exit rate ticket size, and that has grown overall by about 19%. So, so for protection, it hasn't. We are not really seeing that has gone down, but savings has gone down.
Okay, got it, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Avinash Singh from SBI Cap Securities. Please go ahead. Mr. Singh, your line is in talk mode. If you have muted yourself from the handset, kindly unmute yourself, please.
Yeah, hi. Good afternoon. Quickly, two questions. One, if you can please provide that 10 billion or almost 5.5% negative economic variances in your EV walkthrough. What is the contribution of the reference rate going down, and what's the impact of equity market fall? And the second one is that if I look, put together the revenue account and shareholder account, total bad investment provision for the full year this year is almost close to 8 billion. That was last year almost just 1 billion. So apart from yes, tax, year one, what are the other, what are the other key names here? Thank you.
Yeah, Srini, do you want to take the first part?
Yes, and then maybe followed by the second? Yeah, I can. Yeah.
Yes.
So largely, say the fall in the equity market is sort of more pronounced than the upside, a little bit of upside from the fall in the yields. So by and large, you'll see more sort of a dominant effect from equities on the VIF component, close to around 700-800 crores. And then you have a little bit of this 81 bonds effect of another 100 crores. But the upside from falling yields, primarily on the A&W side, I mean, the net worth is only about 100 crores or so. So a large effect is actually due to the fall in the equities. And, you know, the fall in equities is felt primarily in the UL in the UL products, where the loss of future fund management charges as a result of the lower equity is a main reason for the that itself is around 500 crores of the 1,000 crores fall that you see there, and around 200 crores is because of the equity fall impact on the shareholder funds. Mainly it is an equity fall. And a little bit of upside coming through from the drop in the yield curve.
And Neeraj, do you want to just talk about the impairment?
Yes. So in terms of impairment, the number that you mentioned is broken down into shareholder and policyholder. So for policyholder, it's in the region of about 560 crores, and for shareholders, it's in the region of about 200 odd crores. This is largely on account of the diminution in the equity value as per our impairment policy. So we basically stuck to our policy, which is approved by our investment board investment committee, and taken the diminutions because of the volatility that we've seen in the market. We've seen a 40% dip in the last quarter and a 30% dip in month of March in terms of the key indices. So that is something that we've reflected. A large part of the diminution that you see here is in quarter four. More than about 80% of the diminution for the year has happened in quarter four. A lot of, apart from the S-Bank 81, which we referred to, most of these others are names which we do expect things to kind of change over the next few quarters, and the diminution would then get adjusted accordingly. But we've not taken any exception to our diminution policy in a volatile time, and we've stuck to that and taken all the diminution in equity as required by our policy.
And just to add to that, even within the policyholder funds, it is in various segments. So you would find that it is there in unit link, PAR, and so on. So not all of it is a impact to profit, direct impact to profit.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Udit Kariwala from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you for taking my question. My first question is in terms of the sensitivity analysis. I think the numbers for persistency, interest rate, and tax rate have gone up. Can you throw some light on this?
Shini, you want to start off and then maybe Neeraj can add?
Yeah, the numbers are fairly stable. In fact, we saw, on account of persistency, it's actually come down from the previous quarters because of the strengthening of the assumptions I talked about earlier in the persistency. The EV itself has taken a hit because of the assumptions changes, and because the EV itself has come down, any stresses on a reduced EV would actually come down correspondingly. So the sensitivity is actually lower on the persistency from what was the case earlier. So it's not actually gone up. So I don't know which one you're comparing.
But I'm talking to sensitivity to VNB and not EV. Why it has moved up, and if you could give some color even for tax and on the reference rate as well.
So when you say it's gone up, the
sensitivities are higher.
So it is 0.5 and 0.6. So you're saying it was higher from the previous quarter, you mean, or which is higher?
Higher from the last published sensitivity, what was there?
Right. I may need to check because my understanding is it should actually.
So if I give out the number, last persistency sensitivity was 0.8 minus 0.8 and for increase in 10% and plus 0.6 for decrease in 10%.
Yeah.
Now it has gone up to minus 2.1 and 2.1 for increase and decrease respectively. Even the tax rate sensitivity has moved up from 17.4 negative to minus 20. And the reference rate has also gone up. So just wanted to understand this.
Right.
Shini, this would be a change in product mix to some extent and also the assumption changes. So you could maybe refer to that. And
Probably I can connect after the call on this. The other thing which I wanted to check is on the effective tax rate. Has that been factored in and what is the impact, if any?
Neeraj, you want to have a go?
Yes, so that's been done. In fact, we discussed this at the time of Seoul budget situation as well. So the effective tax rate for us, in fact, this time has gone down, and whatever changes that we expect in FY21 have already been factored into our embedded value and our VNB. So this time the ETR, our effective tax rate was lower because of lower surplus due to higher growth and higher dividend income that we received. So we had a lower effective tax rate this year. FY21, because of the abolishment of DTT, the impact of that we stated earlier as well is about 0.2% on our EV, VNB, and about 0.2% on our EV.
Sorry, 0.2 on VNB and 0.2 on EV, on a negative side, right?
Yeah, on the negative side, 0.3% on VNB and 0.2% on EV.
Okay, thank you so much. That's it.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ravi Naredi from Naredi Investment. Please go ahead.
Hello, ma'am.
Yes, sir.
Would like to know how much reinsurance we are doing and whom we do this insurance.
So we have various reinsurance companies with whom we have treaty agreements. And the amount that we retain also varies from different lines of business. So what we retain, for example, on our individual protection is very different from what we would retain on some of our savings products. And we also have a quota share. So it is quite varied in terms of different lines of business.
So this
the reason for the increase in reinsurance premium that you see is largely because of us writing more protection business.
Okay. And this reinsurance we are doing from Indian companies or foreign companies?
We do from all companies. Whoever is willing to work with us, we do it.
Okay. And ma'am, income from investment is lost around 10,229 crore. Will you highlight what is the matter?
Yes, because everything is on track except the mark-to-market loss due to the equity markets having fallen by about 26%. And that is in the range of 12,000 crore. And we are required by regulations to whatever portfolio that we have, the 1.24 trillion or 1,24,000 crores, that we have to mark-to-market at least in terms of whatever the prices, prevailing rates are as of 31st of March. And this is nothing but the mark-to-market loss that you see.
And the reason for this is basically because insurance companies need to recognize premium as revenue, and any change in that is basically coming as either increase or decrease in revenue or income. What happens here is that if the markets are down and the income is shown as lower, that would also reduce your reserves and liability to the same extent. So the impact on P&L is really a second-order effect of any lower FMC on a lower base.
Okay. All the best. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sanket Goda from Spark Capital. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity. I wanted a clarity that since we have not taken the entire pass on of the reinsurance rate to the end customer, you told that there will be different strategies to make it margin neutral. So just wanted to understand few which could help us to understand that the margins could be maintained in protection business.
Yeah, so first of all, you know, our product Sanket is awaiting regulatory approval. So whether we will pass it on or not and how much we pass it on, right now it's on the drawing board. But as and when we get the approval, that's when in the past, because we do believe that just because reinsurers are charging us more does not mean that the, you know, customer should automatically be charged everything to retain margin. So we have to find other ways. And some of those ways are, product mix is one. Even if you look at on par itself, our margins on par without really giving specific numbers have expanded 150 basis points. So there are different ways of just stretching margins. There's also bringing down the cost of acquisition. There is also also in terms of how much we retain on books that we feel fairly comfortable, so we don't have to necessarily reinsure every part of our business and so on. So it is, you know, we have four or five different kinds of levers, some big, some small, for us to be able to cushion the part that we don't pass on.
Okay, so basically it means that probably if you don't pass on the rate hike completely, we might take a bit of hit on the protection margin, but it should be compensated by the better margins in the saving side, like by increasing the margins in power business or more retaining or cost of acquisition coming down kind of a thing. Is my understanding right?
Yeah, so we always take a portfolio approach. So we look at portfolio margins rather than at a segment level, because ultimately it's at a company level margin and there will always be these pushes and pulls.
Yeah, and just one more thing which I wanted to understand is that our VNB margin assumption changes to 60 bits, negative 60 bits, but 20 bits is coming from effective tax rate. So just wanted to understand where is that 40 bits coming from? And similarly, that operating assumption changes of 1.2 billion rupees, what we made in the EV, can we get that broader breakup into effective tax rate, cost, and persistency?
Neeraj, you want to start off on that?
Yes, so if you look at the VNB sensitivities,
I'm referring to page number 35 with respect to VNB, where you say that VNB margin is impacted by 60 bits because of the assumption change. I understand 0.2 is coming from effective tax rate. So I just wanted to understand where that 40 bits is coming from. And second, with respect to the EV waterfall chart, which is in page number 10, where operating assumption changes is minus 0.2. So I believe some portion is effective tax rate. And where is the other part coming from?
So we mentioned earlier on the call as well, so what we've done is this time, effective tax rate is one, but also we mentioned that we've strengthened our assumptions. Assumptions are both in terms of mortality as well as in terms of persistency. So what we've done is that we've reviewed the experience of March that's happened post COVID. We've also taken some sort of estimates in terms of how we believe persistency will pan out going forward. Srini alluded to that in terms of actual persistency versus the stresses that we've taken. So some part of it, large part of it is obviously on the back book, which is reflecting in the WIF change. But the business written in the past 12 months also has to be given impact, or rather has to be given effect to. So that is what you see as the assumption change in the VNB as well, in addition to ETR and in addition to the COVID reserve. So that's basically the on the VNB side. As far as EV is concerned, if you can, I'm sorry, if you could just repeat your question, sorry.
No. Broadly, I think you have answered it with respect to this also, that 1.2 billion is combination of effective tax rate, persistency strengthening, and COVID reserve strengthening.
So basically, we've given effect to the entire book, not just the past, but also the last 12 months. So we've split that into the two parts, yes.
And this in slide number 21, this is a little counterintuitive, that when the interest rates are going up by 100 basis points, our margins on VNB margins are showing negative for a non-par business. Actually, you will end up earning more. So net-net, your margin should be positive with respect rather than being negative. I'm failing to understand that point. If you can give a clarity, that would be really useful.
Yeah, so typically what would happen is that if you are unhedged, then when interest rates go up, you will get higher margins out of your non-par book. And if interest rates go down, obviously you will see a lot lower margins. In our case, given that we are fully hedged and not just on duration but on cash flows, and we have locked in our earnings through either assets that we bought or through FRAs that we've locked in, that's how the sign change is possible in our case, and that in fact is actually giving us more comfort, and it should give more comfort to investors as well, that when interest rates actually go down, which is what people think will happen over the medium to long term, the margins will only see an upside.
Got it. Fair enough. And finally, just on your credit protect. Okay, no problem. I will take it subsequently.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vinod Rajamani from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Hello. I had a question on the in your EB walk, that 10 billion number which you have talked about in terms of the operating variance. If you could just give a split in terms of how much is related to equity and how much is it related to debt.
Shini, you want to, you have that handy?
Yeah. Yeah, so that's broadly about 900 crores would be equity. And if you classify 81 bonds as equity, that will be another 100 crores. But there is a slight contra movement on the debt side as well. So broadly, a significant proportion of 1,000 crores is actually equity.
Okay, thanks. And in terms of the tax rate change, what is the impact in the operating variance that you will have in terms of the EV walk as well as the new business value walk?
So we did discuss it. It is in the range of 0.2 to 0.3%.
Okay, sure. Thanks. Yeah, that's all. Thank you so much.
Thank you. A reminder to the participants, please limit your questions to one per participant. Should you have any follow-up, request you to rejoin the queue, please. The next question is from the line of Nidhi Jain, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity. I'm from Investec. With respect to the credit life business, which is most likely to see a decline in FY21, and we were hedging our non-par portfolio, we are doing cash flow hedge using credit life inflows. So do you see a change in hedging strategy going into FY21, and will there be a consequent impact on your ability to underwrite non-par savings business and offer the levels of guarantee that we were doing historically?
So Nidesh, I'll just start off and then Neeraj can add. We have been mentioning that credit life as a portfolio at the beginning when FRAs are not allowed, that's when it came in handy. Today, it is no longer the only way that we hedge our non-par portfolio. There are various other partly paid bonds as well as, like I mentioned, FRAs themselves. And this aids in both ALM as well as cash flow matching. So it is not that everything is only dependent on credit life, which yes, we do agree with you. Apart from certain parts of the lending environment, most of it is in a fairly bearish mode. Anything, Neeraj, you want to add?
No, you covered it. Just a couple of very quick things. So there are two things here. One is in terms of the rate and second is in terms of the amount of business. Now, rate is not really dependent on any of the hedging instruments. It's really dependent on what's available in the economy and based on our ability to take any credit risk, lock in the rates. So the rates that will be available to customers will be completely based on that, as you've seen in the past, with our dynamic repricing, both in Sanchay Plus as well as in annuities. As far as the amount of business is concerned, with the added avenues that we have for hedging, we do not see that to be a constraint. But, of course, we will monitor our ability to write new business on the basis of the ability to hedge as well. Whichever instrument is effective, we will use that. And if at any point in time any of these become a constraint, of course we will monitor our product mix. But like you said in the past, our willingness to write this business is more governed by our balanced product mix approach. So every quarter you've seen us bring down this business to a particular level, so that approach will continue.
Sure. And secondly, from a product mix perspective, if I look at over the next 2 to 3 years, I think one should not expect a further increase in non-par savings as percentage of overall mix. So hence, from here onwards, the margin improvement lever is largely from annuity and protection. Is that a right understanding, or do you see margin improvement levers in the savings business also?
We definitely see them in savings as well. And if we get health, even more so. So, you know, we don't want to be slotted into it's either this or that as whatever is visible today. There are so many other product innovations that we can do, which could be hybrid between different segments. Technology is something that we have just scratched the surface in terms of how we offer. So it's not just what we sell, but also how we sell. So we feel fairly enthused over a lot of these innovations that would be first to the market. And so it somewhat will become not as important as to slotting it into protection, being the only savior, or reducing something else, or putting a cap on non-par. So it's a combination of both technology as well as product innovation.
Sure. And just lastly, on the operating variances, if you can share the breakup in terms of persistency, mortality, expenses, and others, that would be very helpful.
Srini, you want to give a color on that?
Sorry, can you repeat the question?
Operating variances, giving more details on that.
Right. So operating variances, largely the the persistency variance and mortality and expense variance. So by and large, we are positive on every one of them. Because of the various initiatives we put in place to strengthen the 13-month persistency and mortality, and due to optimal reinsurance protection we've got, and also cost control, and all these things have resulted in various aspects of the operating variance broadly, within our assumptions. But like I said, in spite of the operating variance being favorable, we have decided to strengthen the a few assumptions, primarily on account of the uncertainties resulting from the COVID crisis we are going through. But as things pan out over the next quarter, or two, we will see whether there is any merit to unwind any of those assumptions.
Sure. And these operating
sorry to interrupt, sir. Thank you.
Sure.
The next question is from the line of Dhaval Gada from DSP Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Vibha. Just a couple of questions. First, could you talk a little bit about operating cost and its ability to sort of help in this time on the margins? Just how much ability do we have on the cost front to maintain margins and improve them? And the second is, I missed the comment that Neeraj made around the amount of additions we made related to persistency. So if you could just quantify that. Yeah, those are two questions. Thanks.
Yeah, sure. So if you were to look at the breakup of the cost, about 26% odd is our employee-related cost. About 50% is all distributor and new business sales variable cost. So if you were to see what are all the controllable versus non-controllable costs and leave the employee costs as is, because the need of the hour is to have a little bit more of empathy. So, like I said, 50-55% sales variable. There's also volume-related cost, which is another 7%, which is all your things like stamp duty and medical and those sorts of things. Again, new business-related. So that is 62%. Then you have your fixed cost, which is your infrastructure, your technology investments, which is about 12%. So 62-65% is almost entirely variable. That just leaves about 35-38% that we have to deal with in the event of a slowdown, because that's what I'm assuming that you are alluding to. And even within that, things like branches, so we have 421 branches. We have a plan as we speak today as to if this is, if COVID-19 takes a very long time for normalcy to come back. As of today, we are able to service our customers, like I said in my opening comments, as to the number of claims and the 300 death claims and the 21,000 annuity settlements, etc. There's virtually nothing that we are not able to do today, which means that we are in a position to be able to roll this out reasonably for good, and which means that we might not require that many touch points. Of course, this will be subject to some of our conversations with the regulator, but the point is in terms of if there is that much of deep pain and for the survival of the sector, some of those measures might become pertinent. But as of today, so we want to have a very calibrated approach. All the homework is done as of almost a fortnight back of what we need to do in which scenarios. We have three scenarios that we have worked out on, and we will wait and watch and react as those scenarios hopefully don't pan out, because we also need to have an eye on when growth starts coming back. We have good people, we have good investments made, and it's very easy to roll back, but more difficult to build once again. So really it needs to be in a calibrated manner. But like I said, the homework has been done and we are ready with plans under the different scenarios.
Understood.
Sorry to interrupt, sir, but for any follow-up request, you rejoin the queue, please.
Sure.
Next question is from the line of Nishin from Kotak. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Just two things. One was, you know, if you could give a breakup of, I actually dropped off in between, but if you could give us a breakup of the operating variance of 150 crores and just on the investment variance of 1,000 crores, I think somehow, you know, looking at the sensitivity that you put out last quarter, I think it doesn't really add up. And second one was on the COVID 2019 kind of results, you know, what kind of impact do you really see on the business?
Srini, you want to have a go at?
Yeah. See, I think the same question got asked a while ago from someone. So the operating variance on all the parameters, they are positive. They add up to around 150 crores, and every one of them is positive. On the investment variance, I was saying earlier that out of 1,000 crores, broadly around 900 crores is due to equity fall. And if you classify 81 bonds as equity, then it is another 100 crores fall due to equity. And remaining small amount is due to debts.
But debt you should have a positive, right?
Yeah, very small positive. But, you know, you have a contra because it was, I don't know how you classify the 81 bonds and all, but... you know, that's action diminution. So debts you'll get a positive because of the drop in the yield curve, but that's not as much as it because
that's
more than contrabalance.
Credit. I mean, are you suggesting that's got offset by the credit downgrades?
No, since you have the EV on a risk-free curve, the EV is always on a risk-free basis. You don't get credits for any, you know, so it's on RFR basis, the risk-free curve that we use for valuing EV. So that, but when you actually have a market crash or bonds not sort of, you know, having a repayment issue like in the S1, S Bank 81, then there will be a actual downgrade or a diminution. So, of the 1,000 crores, predominantly more than 900 crores is due to equity fall.
Sure. This time on COVID 2019, if you could just kind of maybe put some numbers to, you know, what you're really looking at.
Yeah. So COVID reserves, we've set up around 40 odd crores for COVID, and that is based on you know, what the actual spread of the pandemic across the country, and we mapped that geographical spread with our number of lives where we've written in the across various states and. Cities, and we also overlaid the you know, the age profile, because COVID typically affects a certain age band, so mainly say 45-50 year plus comorbidities, you know, people who have diabetes or hypertension. So we sort of classified the various pockets of our book and compared that with the actual spread of the pandemic in the country, and we also take an account of the you know, various age bands in which people have fall under, and accordingly come up with this number of around 40 odd crores, which translates to around 4,500 or extra lives that we have provided for due to COVID.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Mayank Burediwala from Franklin Templeton. Please go ahead.
Hey, hi. Thanks for taking my question. I just have a follow-up on those disclosures that you have provided on the non-par guaranteed book, the three stress scenario tests that you have done. And I understand under every scenario, the equity value on that particular book remains positive. But I want to understand that under which of these scenarios, while the equity value is positive, we would start seeing significant negative variances versus what we have already assumed. On to the next.
So, Frank, basically, this net asset liability position is reflective of change in shareholder value, the volatility in that. If your question was around equity values, there is no equity that we hold in this portfolio. It's all debt. So this, what you see in the net asset liability position change is basically the upwards or downward change in that given any of these stress scenarios. So that's what this indicates. And if you see it in conjunction with the earlier slide, it tells you the impact at an overall level. It gives you impact for the entire non-par portfolio on base case interest change, interest rate changes as well. So these are the three additional stress scenarios that we've taken, which combines or rather talks about a higher change in interest rate and combining with demographic changes as well in terms of persistency. So this is the change in shareholder value in case these changes do happen.
Got it. Understood.
Also, for any follow-up, request you to rejoin the queue, please.
Sure.
The next question is from the line of Shreya Shivani from CLSA India Private Limited. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. I have two questions. First is on the guaranteed product, the non-par savings product. So can you give some light on what is the current guaranteed IRR that you're offering and how much cut have we taken overall with the first product which was launched back in March 19 to now? And how much demand, I mean, do you think the demand of this product over FY21, keeping in mind that it is a year impacted by pandemic, so what is your demand outlook on this product? And my second question is on the unwind rate. So I wanted to understand if the FY20 unwind rate is based as of March 20 or is it based as of March 19? Because I see that the unwind rate has come down to 7.5% now. So if you can help me understand this and any guidance on how it will be going ahead. Thank you.
So as far as demand for non-par is concerned, it's you have to see it in, so before that, in terms of repricing, we repriced our product numerous times. We've discussed this, whether it's annuity or the non-par product. We started with offering guaranteed rates of around 6% when the interest rates were in the 8% range. And we've kept these in line with what's available in the market and ensuring that our spread is enough to manage our risk, expenses, and margins. So we've kind of maintained that. From a demand perspective, we do not see this in absolute terms. We need to see it in relative terms. When interest rates go down in the economy, they will also affect fixed deposit rates, savings bank rates, small savings rates, as we've seen recently. So what our product needs to compete with is with all of these instruments. And on a tax-adjusted basis, the proposition still remains attractive. So in an uncertain environment, even if interest rates go down, the demand for this product category should be fairly healthy. How much we want to do will depend on what we all discussed earlier in terms of maintaining a balanced product mix and ensuring that the portfolio is always fully hedged. As far as the unwind is concerned, we did mention that interest rates have come off in the 90 to 110 basis points range over the last year, and our unwind rate, which was in the 8.5% range, has come down to about 7.6. So it's about it kind of completely reflects the change that have happened in the interest rate scenario over the last 12 months.
Sure, understood. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is on the line of Rishabh Parekh from Siddhi Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, I had two questions. One is, Vibha, how are you seeing the behavior till date of renewal post this COVID crisis? Are you seeing a sharp reduction? While I appreciate that you have taken, you have strengthened your persistency assumptions, but just how has the behavior been on the ground is my first question. And my second question is the persistency. I just heard a previous caller ask if the persistency was only till February because the March data would be coming out now. So all the just wanted to clarify if all the persistencies mentioned in the presentation were till February and not March. Thanks.
Yeah, hi, Rishabh. Yes, what we are beginning to see is that there is a slowdown. How much is a slowdown? Anything up between 40% to 50% in terms of delayed collections is what we are saying. Is it alarming? We need to see because it could also be a function of the fact that they have now one more month to pay premium while we're still counseling people and reaching out to say that pay your premiums on time. But as of now, there is a strong, like I mentioned, cash conservation. To your second question, yes, it's as of February.
And so just wanted to understand, is this, this is the kind of experience that we have baked into our operating assumption strengthening. Is that, would that be fair to assume?
We have baked that into our assumption strengthening and more so on unit link.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pawan from ISL. Please go ahead.
Thank you, ma'am, for the opportunity. My question is on the future growth of the business. Like you mentioned that you will be looking at protection as the main focus area and also mentioned that the NARPA, while the interest rates have reduced, it still remains competitive with respect to what are the other products in the market available. But if you look at the savings, the protection product, you know, it has become like race to bottom with all the other players coming in and focusing more and more on the protection. Like every call you attend, everyone says that protection is their new focus product. ULIPs are out of favor because of the market conditions. And non-par, while you say that it still remains attractive, the interest rates are regularly going down year over year. I mean, at least over the last 1 year. So looking at next 3 to 5 years, what would be the like focus areas for the growth? Where would the growth be coming from? Thank you.
Yeah. So I'll start off and maybe Suresh, you can add.
Yeah.
And even my earlier comments, we don't believe that protection is the only lever and protection is the only way forward for insurance. There is a reason why in India, savings-led insurance made a lot of sense. And even today, if I were to look at who are my customers and who is buying insurance, there is a sizable population that's about, say, 48 years of age. And perhaps not still a happy convert to only buying protection. And so we are a firm believer that we are catering to India and Bharat and want to penetrate into smaller ticket sizes, more into hinterland, more into non-salaried class. And that's when all parts of our offering become very, very relevant, including, say, participating products. And participating products today, especially our Sanchay Par Advantage, is significantly more accretive to the bottom line than maybe other asset classes and so on. So, and there is a place under the sun because it makes sense for a risk averse policyholder who wants very little exposure to equity and so on, like money back schemes, etc., with a life cover. So a balanced product mix is something we will continue to focus on. We've been saying that for a long time. So we'll continue to focus on that. Credit life is something that as long as we price it sensibly, because there also we are beginning to see a lot of irrational behavior and we are actually beginning to exit some of the relationships because, again, there's a race to the bottom because of the kind of pricing either to the distributor or in terms of how cheap you make the product and not really covering your the kind of claims experience that one is seeing, especially in MFI. And so, and GTI also is making a lot of sense to us. Health through on the group platform is making a lot of sense. pension continues. This is the first time we've introduced a slide. Maybe it was too early in terms of the call, but pension is another different way of looking at longevity risk. So for us, it is many tongs in the fire as against only protection. Suresh, you want to add something?
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, you covered it. But just to share with you, I think one of the things that we see is an opportunity across mortality, morbidity, and longevity. We have probably the maximum range of products which we have been selling to on goal base. So if you were to really look at our customer base, it's not that there is no opportunity for ULIP even in this market. So there is a set of customers who've seen a correction who probably need to rebalance their portfolio. A lot of the customers who are looking at non-par products still see us as compared to many other asset classes. You know, even for the earlier question which had come, a lot of the customers who had invested in non-par products at higher interest rates earlier, you can see very high persistency, which will probably remain. So, you know, we don't see that as here. Similarly, in terms of protection, I don't think customers out there are only going to go just based on pricing. A lot of the decisions by the customer depend on claim rates, depends on which company, which brand, what are the features of the particular product. And we do believe there is a lot of innovation which can happen in even just not the vanilla product, in terms of being able to cover. So we're not really worried about the markets. Like Viva said that, look, there are the annuity market and the annuity segment in that age group. Even if we were to look at our own customer base, the opportunity to upsell and cross-sell is so large that we can go back to a certain set of customers and sell any of these products. So we don't really see a worry in terms of which pool we want to remain profitable. But I do think that, look, there's enough opportunity out there to reach out to a lot of customers who anyway are getting more aware and inclined towards life insurance now.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Hitesh Arora from Unifi Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Now, could you give a sense of the business that was lost due to COVID in the last, say, 15, 16 calendar days of the financial year? And the second was, you know, because the medical checkup, you know, it's not possible these days. Do you limit at what sum assured are you going for with Capitally? And that, what is, how do you tackle that? So there's some lost business there as well, right? So how do you tackle that?
Yeah, so on that, in terms of loss of revenue, about 1,000 to 1,100 crores, new business and renewal premium put together is our estimate. Suresh, you want to add anything?
I meant in terms of, say, it would be in terms of VNB, what would be the number?
You can assume a similar kind of a product mix.
Okay, so this number, multiplied with the margin?
This I'm talking about both new business and renewal put together.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. The next question is Kanav Pratik from Nirmal Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yeah, hi.
Am I audible? Yeah, hi, ma'am.
Yes.
Ma'am, just once, I was just thinking this. There are two, if I may say, headwinds for us this year, which would be, as you just talked about, credit life being a muted year because of lower disbursement growth. And secondly, on the protection side, the reinsurance costs might be passed on in a graded manner, or you would look at alternative strategies. And given that this, the protection segment for us, when it comes to VNB, is a substantial part, I'm just thinking as to if you could, you know, again, a talk of some clarity as to how will this get compensated when it comes to VNB margins, because as I said, this is a substantial part of your VNB. And second is, ma'am, in your individual protection, I see growth of 23% on a YOY basis. But given that share of limited pay would be higher, could you also talk about in terms of number of policies, what kind of growth have we seen? Thank you.
Yeah, so you asked two, three questions. So I, if I recall, the first question is in terms of your VNB and what your protection could have, was that your first question?
No, my first question was that your protection is a VNB, is a dominant, I mean, within your VNB, protection is a dominant part, and there are two headwinds.
No, so I just want to, it is an important part, but not necessarily a dominant part. Now I recall in terms of your credit life, in fact, the credit life slowdown will actually be some of, and are exiting some of the partnerships like I talked about, wherein there is irrational pricing or the trends on mortality, absolutely we are unable to price those kind of trends, it will be margin accretive rather than depletive. So that's on credit life.
From a margin perspective, not absolute perspective, I'm assuming. Because the lower margin products...
No, even on that. Even on absolute VNB, because some of this are loss-making.
Okay.
Right? So, and that's why we want to exit. Otherwise, we won't exit it. It just doesn't make sense at all. And there's no roadmap also for us to get some clarity as to when are we likely to... and if we are going to break even at all.
Right? Sure. And the last...
The question
was on limited pay. Could you just split the growth of your individual protection into number of policies versus ticket size, if it is possible?
Neeraj, do you have that information ready? Otherwise, you can give it to you separately.
Yeah, I think we'll just connect offline, please, for this.
Sure. So, and Vibha, what is family policy density and client policy density? This is on slide 32.
Just give me a second.
Some additional customer insights. I'm assuming these customer insights are based on your own customers, right?
Yes. Yeah. These are all our own insights. Yeah.
So what is family policy density? How do you define it?
This is number of people in that family. So on average, close to 4 people.
And client policy density is what?
So this is wherein...
This will be at a unique customer level, and what will be there at the overall family. So you could have various policies in a particular family across multiple products.
Correct. And client policy is that where we have upsold to the client. So 1.3 policies is the average policy that our customers have.
And 3.7 is per family?
Per family, yeah.
Ma'am, so then the potential to farm is lower than hunt, right, now? Because if there are 4 policies per family for your customer, then incrementally you have to add new customers. Is that the way to think about it?
Not really, because not all of them, unfortunately, hold on to their policies. If you look at persistency data, that would be the case if they continue to pay their premiums. But for whatever reason, they've stopped paying. They are completely underinsured. So you can go back to them. When you look at term rates versus term rates that prevailed in India, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, the rates today are, even before the reinsurance and all that saga started, but the rates are as anything between 30% to 40% cheaper. So there's always a conversation, or there's a product innovation that has happened, and we are known for product innovation. So for us to go back and say that, okay, you now have very little cover, are you interested in doing this at a much lower cost?
Sure, ma'am. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Raja Kumar V, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, ma'am. I have a question on the provisions for diminution of investments. I see that the provision line appearing twice in the P&L. It would be helpful if you could give some color to that, and also want to know that the markets have recovered since March. So whether any of these provisions would reverse in the coming quarter.
I'm sorry, your voice was a little faint. If you could just please repeat that.
Hello?
Yes, please, if you could repeat that question.
Yeah. So my question is on the provision for the diminution of investment. I see that the provision appearing twice, in two lines in the P&L, totaling to about 560 crores. Just wanted to know, since the markets have recovered since March, I just want to know whether any of them would be reversing in the current quarter, and if so, if you have any color on the amount.
We did discuss, right, and large part of the diminution for FY20 was in the last quarter, and this is as per impairment policy, so that's basically largely a quantitative factor of the change in price since the securities were bought, and second is in terms of the movement in the last few months. So it's a combination of that, and if the trend reverses, of course, we will be very happy to write that back. We will stick to the policy, whatever the policy approved at any point in time, and the impairments would take cognizance of upward and down movements in the market. So yes, if there is a positive change that happens in this quarter, which we've seen since March 31st, we will see what can be crystallized as on June 30th, as per the policy.
Okay. The second question is, you know, despite having a 560 crore provision, the bottom line has just moved down only by like 60 crore, you know, between the March 19 and the March 20. So what is driving, you know, despite the 500 crore provision, what is making up for this bottom line?
Basically, there are two things. One is the policyholder surplus that comes to shareholders. That's a large chunk of what constitutes shareholder profit. And the second is the investment income from the shareholders. So the investment income from shareholders is a lot higher than last year in the count on in terms of dividend income as well as in terms of dividend. The gains on realization have been lower than last year. And, of course, we've taken diminutions. So the policyholder surplus has flown through from our unit-linked book largely because of lower business and also in terms of the regular transfers from the participating book and the surpluses that arise from the non-par as well. So we've had a good year in terms of new business growth as well as healthy rate and healthy growth and renewals in spite of the situation that we just discussed. So all of that contributes positively to the shareholder accounting profit as well.
Okay. Okay, this is great. Just so the last question.
Mr. Rajakumar. Sorry to interrupt, sir, but for any follow-up request, please rejoin the queue, please. The next question is from the line of Jatin Jain, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yeah, hi, Jatin.
Ma'am, actually, my question is that for the insurance companies, March is a very important month. So due to the corona effect, how much the percentage in the income has been affected if I compare to last year?
If I can take
how much of top line? Yeah, please go ahead.
So you know, normally you are right. The last month of March has a fair percentage contribution to the overall business. But however, if you have seen over the last few years, the skew of the business which is done in the last quarter has started coming down. So if you remember when we had the post-budget discussions also, we came back and said, look, tax is probably not one of the largest reasons why people buy insurance, which is one of the reasons the skew has moved from Q4 to Q1, Q2, and Q3. However, March still remains significant as an overall in terms of percentage. So you would normally find that the last 15 days or the last 2 weeks of March contribute to anywhere between 8% to 10% of the annual number. Now, that is where more or less it has got affected. You would say in the industry, the impact would be around 6% to 7% of the annual numbers which have come in from the COVID last 15 days. So that would probably be proportionate across all. And you would find that in March, most of the numbers, obviously the IRDA numbers have now been published, most of the insurers have degrown. We probably degrown the least in terms of what was our March. But an estimate would be anywhere between 300 to 400 crores of new business which have got impacted in the last 10 days of March.
Okay. As I said, just that your company has degrown least in the insurance sector. So can I assume that due to the March effect, your profit is a little down? It can be related?
No. So actually, the new business, the strain actually affects the profit a little bit more in the sense that the more business you do, there is a more of a strain. So to some extent, the new business strain has actually come down because of a slightly lesser business. So maybe Neeraj, you can add on that. But effectively, we are looking at significantly much higher numbers. If you have seen the year-on-year growth, which has stand for HDFC Life amongst the large private sector players, it can stand out in the higher double digits.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We take the last question from the line of Madhukar Lada from HDFC Securities. Please go ahead.
A couple of quick questions. You mentioned that the equity hit was about 900 crores. On the VIF. So this 900 crores is purely just because of the fund management charges on a lower equity value? That is the right way to read it, right?
No, I said earlier, fund manager, UL is only about 500 crores. Then you have the equity impact on the shareholder net worth. That is about 200 crores. And then on the participating products also, you have some equities. And if the equities fall, the ability to pay the future bonuses from which you will actually get a shareholder transfer, they also fall. So it is a projection of how much the total loss in the future transfers as bonus to the PAR customers also has a contributory effect in the fall of equities. So, but the UNSMC alone is around the 500 crores and 200 crores is around PAR.
The shareholders.
And 200 crores, another 200 crores is in the shareholder equity.
Understood. And then back to the non-PAR, additional disclosures that you've given. In the three scenarios, our net asset position actually becomes is still positive, but it is slightly lower than what we have incorporated in our EV. Right, that's the right way of reading it, right?
Well, the right way to look at it is basically the base EV captures our best estimate assumptions of each of these elements, whether it's the interest rate or policyholder behavior. Stresses in normal course are something that we put out in our sensitivity slide. These are severe stresses to one part of a portfolio. So the impact of which is mentioned at the bottom of page 21. And the results of these stresses are what you're talking about on page 22. Now, this is basically to give the management, the board, shareholders, and all of us comfort that even if there are severe stresses, what is the movement in the value of the shareholders? That is what this tells you. Because if you look at any extreme stresses, for example, if equity markets go down by 30%, the impact on embedded value and VNB will be higher than what it would be in normal course. Now, that's obviously going to be the case. Interest rates fall by 3%, it will affect the portfolio in different ways from what it would affect if interest rates fall by 1%. So this is basically the severity of the test. If you were to look at it in terms of the regular sensitivities that you do, sensitivities, like Srini explained, have in fact come down across each of those elements, whether it's persistency, interest rate, because of a balanced portfolio.
Yeah, but this minus 4.5% or minus 7% is on a baseline EB which we have on a baseline sort of assumption that we have incorporated. So, what percentage would these two portfolios sort of contribute in our EV?
So, in terms of our value of in-force, that's fairly well spread between unit-linked participating and non-participating. So, the impact that you see is on this portfolio, which will be one portion of the VIF. We are not talking about how much of VIF is coming from each of these components, but is reasonably well distributed across unit-linked participating and non-participating. And what you see on page 21 is the result of the interest rate that you would apply interest rate.
Right. All right. Thank you. That'll be it from my side. Yeah.
Thank you. I now hand the conference over to Ms. Vibha Padalkar for closing comments. Ms. Vibha?
Apologies, I was on mute. Thank you everyone for being part of this conference call. Stay safe. And if there's anything further in terms of clarifications, please do reach out to Kunal Jain from our IR team. Thank you and good evening.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of HDFC Life Insurance Company Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us and you may now disconnect your lines.